business does an incredible amount of good for people. So number one, it's just the fact of trading dollars for services that we can do faster, better, cheaper than anybody else can. If it just stopped there, that would be a good in and of itself. And then on top of that, you know, we get to employ people, which now they can plug their talents into our business and, you know, release their value onto the world.
Welcome back to the Pursuit of Profit podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode with Josh Kattenberg, franchise owner of Real Property Management. Today, we're discussing how he built a $14 million company with no money and no industry experience. Why operating in a small market can have huge advantages. Why property management is recession and AI resilient. And why his goal of 20,000 units under management by 2029 is attainable. We hope you enjoy the show, and please follow us as we drop new episodes each week on Wednesdays.
All opinions expressed by Cliff, Justin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Phrenosity and Pursuit of Profit. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions.
I actually have a feeling, Cliff, that this could end up being our most listened to episode. I love these videos, all these real estate bros talking about how many units they have, you know, 20, yeah. 2,500 units, 4,000 units. It's like, here's Josh. This guy's a former high school principal building a massive business. We love real estate. We went to Discovery Day with RPM. The brand that we're talking about here is Real Property Management, the largest residential single family home property management franchise in North America, 450 locations. They manage 68,000 rental homes nationwide, $18 billion in assets. Just incredible. Owned again by Neighbourly. This is not the first Neighbourly brand we've had on. We've had on several. Neighbourly is a $4 billion company with, 20, 30 brands maybe. We love the space. We went to Discovery Day. What year was that? Do you remember?
We met. Yeah, I do actually. I always want to call him Gary, but his name is Kirk McGarry. Right?
Yep.
And then we met with his business partner, Doug Oler. It was around 2010 because I was flipping a house in New York at the time. And Justin and another business partner, Paul Muscatella, the three of us went out there and met with him.
Yep.
Interestingly, we ended up not doing it. We happened to live in an area with a ridiculously high home ownership rate, which is Nassau, Suffolk County. And if we wanted to do it and be successful, we would have to have gone to Brooklyn and Queens, and we weren't doing that. We ended up moving to Florida, and it would have been perfect in Florida, but we had already pivoted in another investment. But when he says we loved it enough to go out that way and visit those guys. We loved it.
We might have crossed paths because we were out there in 2010 as well.
Is that when you started?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
May of 2010, so.
Could you imagine if you were in the Discovery Day room? That's crazy. The law of attraction and the synchronization is fascinating to me. I wouldn't doubt it if you were in the room. The room was pretty big.
I agree. I want to say there was actually a franchisee in the room from Florida who was already in the business. I want to say like 600 properties that he was already managing, looking to convert his business to RPM at the time, if that says something about the power of the brand and then the support that you would get from a franchise. So I agree. Very impressive. We've always liked the model. We placed a bunch of people in the business. Josh, maybe you could start with, what does your business look like today?
So today, I think if I just looked, we're at about 4,300 units occupied. So, you know, we used to always call it just how many units do you manage, but we had to start really looking at how many are occupied because I think we got like 5,300 under contract just because it's growing and building. You know, these units don't even exist yet. They're coming out of the ground. And so we're having to work on pre-marketing, pre-leasing, just as everything's coming out of the ground. And then employee side, we're at about 125 people in two states, Iowa and South Dakota. And we're probably 6 hours on either side of our home office. So 6 hours east and 6 hours west.
By design. You did that by design?
No, some of that was just, you know, targets of opportunity. So, you know, you really, I mean, this is a belly-to-belly business, right? It's real estate. It's actually got stuff in the ground. So you like to really keep everything concentrated because it just makes for efficiency. However, as we got into working, well, let me back up. When we start out building the business, it's one, and you're spending marketing to bring in every contract. Over time, what happens is there was probably a time in about 2015 where we looked at our growth, and half of it was coming from current investors. You do a good job, and then they're just like, here, have another one, have another one, have another one. And today, we literally spend almost nothing on marketing. The only thing we spend on marketing to acquire new business is to keep our website up, or just things that you just have to do just because. But we can't hardly keep the operational wheels on because so much is coming at us just with organic growth. Do a good job. And right, you give investors a return on investment and like, well, here, have some more money, have some more units. This is great.
Justin, just for the audience, Josh, you're a young guy. How old were you when you started?
Yeah, so I was 30 when I started, and I'm 44 now. So we've been in the business about 14 years. And I missed the piece. The reason why I brought that up about organic growth is, you know, as we start getting in with developers, they're taking on markets where they think there's opportunity. And so you've got the relationship with the developer. And so we just say, they've got, okay, we're going to go put a unit over here that's 2 hours away. Will you guys manage it for us? Well, sure. When there's no RPM in that space, some of them are even small towns, small town Iowa, small town South Dakota. There's never going to be an RPM in those spaces. There's no professional management in those markets. But those markets are in desperate need for housing because everything starts with housing. You know, there's a concept called housing first. So in order to have growing businesses, businesses need employees. And where do employees live? Well, if there's no housing, those businesses are not going to grow. So even if there's jobs, without housing, those economies cannot grow. And so like the governor in the state of Iowa, Governor Reynolds, she's very big on housing, really tries to get the state involved to help incentivize and build more projects in these smaller communities. And so we've been able to tap into that. And so we just go wherever the opportunity is.
Love it. So these bigger investors, are they coming to you with like, they may have a portfolio of 50 properties, like we'll give you 5 or 10. Let's see how you perform, and they're just throwing you more properties, or are they growing because of you? It's like, we started with 5. We like that this guy is able to help us, so let's just keep building our portfolio because we have support from RPM.
Yeah, it's both. So how it starts is you get your foot in the door and they give you one. And it's happened that way on all the developers we work for. They give us one and you blow the doors off and they say, wow, that's amazing. Why don't we have you manage everything that we have? And so then they start pushing away from other managers. We've done that multiple times in 3 different occasions. Took, you know, we start with 100 or 300 units, and before you know it, they've given us 5 to 1,000 units that already existed. So that's do a good job and they give you what they have. And then because you're doing a good job, they're like, well, we can build more. And so then they're actually building more organic growth. And so now the growth is just stacked up. We had a conversation literally 2 days ago with a developer, and his goal is to build, he wants to have 10,000 units in the next 9 years. And he's a young guy too. He's 31. So by the time he's 40, he wants to have 10,000 units. And he's got right now the capacity to build 3,000 a year. We just have to raise the capital. And so that's the kind of growth there is in this industry. Now, you don't start out there, right? We've been in it for 14 years, but you do a good job. You build the relationships. And it is staggering what the opportunity is out there.
When you talk about these developers, are these companies that are building to rent?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. These are mostly townhomes and apartments. We haven't gotten into it yet. There's definitely some single family homes built to rent as well. But what's happening, especially with the interest rates where they're at and the build cost where it's at, it gets pretty difficult to build single family homes and make it pencil on the rental side. Whereas it's a lot cheaper per unit, per square foot, to build it as an apartment complex. Plus, then you got massive amount of amenities. We've got things like indoor, outdoor pools, hot tubs, golf sims, community rooms, theater rooms, package rooms, turf dog parks. I mean, anything you can think of, they're just putting in the amenities to attract residents because you can, because it's 300 units. So 300 units really pays for all that extra stuff, which doesn't actually cost that much.
Okay, I have a question because this seems to be a departure slightly from the RPM model.
Definitely. Real property management started out with single family, and that's where we started too, right? Single family, duplex, fourplex, 16-plex, doing all that. And we did that probably for the first probably about 6 to 7 years before we got our shot at a large multifamily. And multifamily is slightly different. It's not overly different. I mean, it's still, you got to lease stuff, you got to take care of the maintenance, you got to pay the bills, you got to send owner draws. All that's there. What's additional is we have common areas that we normally don't have to take care of for single family. So you got the pools. We had to learn how to take care of pools, mow lawns, plow snow. You know, so you do have some of those additional things that you have to take care of. And I would also say that RPM is pushing into the multifamily space. So I do think they are building out the training, the playbook to add multifamily, because as more of the franchisees have gotten into the space, because that's really where the growth is, you know, there's experience in the franchisee base, and then we can push that knowledge back into the franchisor, and then they can distribute it back out to everyone else. I mean, was it 2, maybe even 3 years ago now, we actually held a workshop for RPM franchisees. They came to Sioux Falls. We had 2 days, said, here's how we're doing. Here's how you charge. Here's how you make money at it. Toured them around properties. And then we had a mastermind after that. We still meet every 2 weeks to talk about how do you win the business? How do you underwrite the business? How do you manage the business? Because it is slightly different.
I have questions. Are you staffing for Harrison? Let me give you some background. So I've sat on every board of every HOA and every community I've ever lived in. And finding a management company, not a residential property management company, a management company to manage the restaurant, the pools, the valet, the everything. Who needs to pressure wash their roof? Who's fining? Who's handling security? Are you now getting in? Am I understanding you correctly? You're going in that direction?
Yes and no. So just on the HOA side, RPM also does HOA management. We've done a little bit in our market. It's not a big thing. Certainly like in Florida, it'd be massive. Right. And there's certainly a model there where if it makes sense in your market, go there. But yes, then if you're managing HOA, yeah, you're paving the road, you're cleaning the pool, you're painting the exterior of all those units.
You're not doing that. You could, but you're not. What you're saying is you bumped into an investor, well-capitalized. They're going to open up a 45-unit building. You're going to manage that property. There is no HOA because there's no homeowners. It's an investor that you represent. And yes, you're dealing with the pool, a little gym, and basic stuff. Are you staffing on site? Are you literally taking over all those responsibilities?
So there's two answers there. So on there's a big difference between HOA management and multifamily management in the sense that multifamily management, you answer to one boss. And that's even different than single family, because in single family, you're answering to 100 bosses versus one boss. And in HOA management, you're answering to a board, and that board's constantly changing. And it's like, sometimes that relationship management is difficult. In the multifamily space, yes, we hire the staff. They're employees of real property management, but we bill all that back to the building. So there's different models on how you can work this. Some models, you actually, the building itself hires the staff and pays the staff directly. We think it's more efficient for us to hire and have the building pay us back, because that way all the payroll benefits, 401ks can all run through our accounting, and then we just bill them back to the property. But yes, we are doing everything. So the leasing, the pool cleaning,
eviction, everything. Yep.
Evictions. Yep. Bill pay, to the point too, where we're doing all the marketing stuff for them too. So all the properties have an individual Facebook page, individual Google My Business page. We'll do open houses. We'll do events even. So we've done things like, you know, you get a food truck in place, or you do yoga and mimosas or anything to kind of build the community. Because when you're living in an apartment versus a single family, there's a higher concentration of people, right? And so there is definitely a more of a community aspect to it.
You have heard from so many exciting franchise brands in a podcast, and you may be sitting there thinking about which ones could be the best fit for you. If this is the case, give us a call. We provide a free consulting service to prospective small business owners like yourself, and we will help you take a disciplined approach to determining which brands could be the best fit for you. Call or text us at 561-277-3710. Or visit www.franosity.com. That's www.franosity.com. We look forward to hearing from you.
This is awesome. Super impressive. I could see the prospective franchise owner at home sitting there thinking like, wow, this seems like a lot, right? This could be overwhelming. Take us back to when you started. What did life look like? What was Josh's role? How many employees did you start with? What types of things were you like? One of the things we love about this business is that it's hub and spoke. Not only are you getting the management fee, but you have the maintenance fees. So what were you doing? How did you acquire customers? What did your staff look like? What were you outsourcing? And then how did you kind of scale up from there?
Yeah. So just going back to the beginning, my background was, you know, very much money was the root of all evil. Service is where it was at. I was a volunteer EMT. I worked in my church, led the youth group, went to college to be a teacher. I knew I wasn't going to make much money as a teacher, but that wasn't what was important to me. I graduated, had a master's degree in education, was teaching during that 2008 and 2009. we're watching, you know, current events with the students. We're seeing Lehman Brothers go down, EIG go down. I'm like, man, maybe I should learn a little bit about this business stuff. And so I picked up a college textbook, just started reading, and was fascinated. I realized that business does an incredible amount of good for people. So number one, it's just the fact of trading dollars for services that we can do faster, better, cheaper than anybody else can. If it just stopped there, that would be a good in and of itself. And then on top of that, you know, we get to employ people, which now they can plug their talents into our business and, you know, release their value onto the world. So that's number two. And they build, you know, houses, families, communities. And then number three, if there's extra, we can give it away. But I put it in that order on purpose. I used to have it flipped. I used to be all about giving back, quote unquote. And then I realized, no, business actually is the one of the best ways we can actually deliver value to our community. So that's where I started. When part of what I was looking at is, you know, I wanted to start a business at that point. And as I'm reading, it's like 9 out of 10 businesses fail in their first 5 years. That's really bad. Then I realized franchises actually have, you know, some of the reverse, like 9 out of 10 succeed. And so we went to a franchise expo and ran into a company called All County. And I was doing the background due diligence on them and ran into RPM. And so they were just light years ahead of where All County was. So I went to the bank and said, hey, can I get a loan to start this? Because I was broke. I mean, a teacher, student teaching, so I literally had no money, like literally no money. And they said, do you have a pro forma, a P&L, a balance sheet? And I had no idea what any of those things meant. I had to mortgage my house to get the payment to do the franchise fee. And the franchise fee is not that expensive, guys. I mean, I think it was like $40,000 back in the day. It's more now, but it's not very much. I couldn't even afford that. So I brought my brother in to bring in half of it. So we both mortgaged our houses to finance that. And I think RPM financed us at that time. And then we both quit our jobs and went to work. And we started in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, which we were not from Sioux Falls. We were about an hour away. So we drove an hour back and forth each way. And we had no business in the first days and weeks. And so we just hit the pavement and worked networking, as built up as many meetings as we could. And then in the afternoons, we literally had nothing to do. So we played Robert Kiyosaki's Cash Flow. First contract, I think we got, it was a single family home. We got it in 1 month after we were in business. And then because, you know, every day money is going out the door, right? You know, the starting a business, or you have no income from your job and you're spending money just to be in business. And so we did everything we could. We did all the maintenance ourselves. So we were getting bats out of attics, replacing toilets, doing paint, scraping walls, power washing, just doing anything we could to get money coming in the door. So that was day one. And then probably in the first year, we had built it up to about 80 units, hired our first employee. Horrible, horrible job on that. I literally hired her because she gave us a resume that was on cardstock. And I thought, if she cares about her resume, she must be good. That was our first hire, and it was a bad hire. And so we ended up having to have our first firing as well. So yeah, that's what it looked like in the early days. We also, probably about 5 years in, we were pretty aggressive. We said we wanted to try to buy other property management companies. So we did that from day one as well. That was probably stupid on our part. We couldn't have afforded it, even if somebody had said yes, but that's fine. About 5 years in, we did acquire another company, paid about $500,000 for that. And we did all our due diligence, did all the background we could think of, talked to as many people as we could, and closed on the deal, you know, massive amount of debt in those days. And twice a week, we were getting fired. So cancellation, cancellation, cancellation.
What attributed to that?
I think there's two things. One was that I, at that point, underappreciated the value of people. So I had read Michael Gerber's book, E-Myth, where he's all about processes, and then you plug in McDonald's workers to do the process. And that's how I really built our business. And I totally undervalued that. In this business, you do have to have some people that can think, can problem solve, can sell. And I was woefully under-equipped in that regard. So we brought on like 400 extra units. We doubled the size of the company. So we're at 800 units. And I've got people that have been on the job all of 2 weeks. I'm saying, here, go. And so, you know, we just did a poor job there. The other piece that I learned was some of the units that we acquired actually went with this other company because they didn't, I don't know, jive with us. We tried to sell them originally and they chose not to go with us, went with this other company. Then we acquired them while they still didn't want to be with us. And so like, see ya, you know, we're out. So yeah, just things that I didn't think of when we started into it.
There is so much here because now fast forward, like my head is
right.
There's so much here to talk about. This is the stuff we talk about every day. One thing, we should reach out to Michael Gerber and see if he would come on the show because we have plugged this book. The guests have plugged this book no fewer than a dozen times. So fast forward, you're successful. People see you rock climbing, living the dream, flying, and doing all the wonderful things that wealth and being intelligent will afford you, right? And then everyone will look at you and go, oh, I'm sure he comes for money. let's just say no to that. Well, I'm sure he had a bunch of money. No to that, right? Well, he got lucky. Absolutely not. And luck has nothing to do with it. No, this guy was a teacher. He studied ancient people. There's no correlation here.
He decided to start learning about business in the worst economic crash of our lifetimes. As Lehman, Bearster, some of the biggest banks in the world are failing. And he goes, oh, it's time to start learning about business. The banks are taking back these properties and renting them out because they have nothing to do with them.
I remember being in the room with Kirk McGarry. And he was saying, like, we're doing Rios. The banks are HSBC, Bank of America. They're giving us all these properties. Remember the whole jingle mail thing? When the banks were receiving mail that would rattle because people sent the keys back to them and they became reorged and then RPM was taking them. He was telling us he was doing $1 billion a month just in credit card rent swiping. I mean, a remarkable story. You're the American dream. Like, that's what you are. You're the American dream. I'm so glad. I want to put this out there because I really believe this. I don't walk over pennies. I never disrespect money. I think it's evil to do that. I don't envy wealthy people. I never speak negatively about money because if you do, you will never have any. That's a fact. Until you rewire your attitude about money, then becoming wealthy is actually easy. It becomes almost a self-fulfilling prophecy. But if you view money as bad, like money is the root of all evil, you'll never have any of it. It's just a fact. It's the way it is. Thoughts become things. And what you think about, you bring about. You want to bring about wealth because you want to use wealth to give back to the community? Great. Do whatever you want to do with your money, but don't shit on money. I think it's great. The whole story that you have is just remarkable to me. Maybe Justin's right. Maybe this would be the most viewed episode because you are the epitome of relatability. No one wants to hear that you're a trust fund baby. No one wants to hear that you were an investment banker and you stroked a check for $500,000 to buy your first franchise or resale. This is what people want to identify with. You did it. The other thing I give you a ton of credit for, not only were you broke, not only did you fully leverage your life and family, you quit your job. You went all in. I give you a ton of credit for that because today's man won't do it. They want to be half pregnant. They want to keep their job. They want to do the business on the side. And then they wonder why the business never grows.
On the one hand, I always felt like I had one leg up from people that were working in corporate America, making lots of money because I had nothing to lose. Like I actually had the conversation with my wife before we started saying, okay, what happens? We had 10 months, basically. If we didn't make it in 10 months to break even, we were bankrupt, right? At that point, my home equity loan was out. I was done and I have to start over. I said, okay, what do we have to lose? When you don't have much to lose, you can go for broke, right? In a certain sense, I had it easier.
You're an inspiration to young people. And I tell every young person that the year you started, 20s and 30s, those are the years of your life that you go all in. You leverage all, your runway is to 70, 80 years of age. So what? You failed. Big deal. Get up, do it again. Go all in when you're young. There's another thing here, which is if you had a net worth of $1 million and you did this and it was a rough start, you might have just closed it because you were already wealthy. And you're like, you know what? This is a pain in the ass. Let's move on. The fact that you did it, it was 10 months or die, right? It's survive and thrive. Failure is not an option. Those are the things that make people successful. I don't think we actually mentioned your revenue number. We, according to our attorneys, we're allowed to do it as long as you're the franchisee and not the franchisor.
That's interesting. When people ask this, I always want to make sure we're defining our terms because people will use different terms, especially I had no accounting background. So it's like, what are we actually talking about? So how I talk about it, we talk about it in real property management. We talk about gross top line, right? That's all in, that's everything that's coming in. And then we talk about real revenue. I know in the accounting world, they might call that gross margin. Mike McAllowitz will call it real revenue, but it's top line minus COGS equals real revenue. So top line, I think right now in the last 12 months is right at 14 million. Real revenue or gross margin is about right at 8 million. And EBITDA is already at about 2.6.
That's what, annual run rate?
That's the last 12 months.
July, trailing 12 months.
T12, yeah.
That's a huge number in your business. You don't measure doors. How do you define a property, a door?
At this point in our evolution, we're defining it as an occupied unit, an occupied door.
And you're
4,300. Let's just over 4,300.
So the 14 million, what of that is rent roll? And is it the entire rent roll that you're taking your percentage from it?
No, that's just my books. So rent roll, wow. Heck, I don't know. I'd have to look. I could look it up. I don't know. A lot. Because, I mean, we're taking a percentage of rents, right?
That could be $120 million in rent roll.
So that's your revenue.
That's, you know, the owner's money, right? So that's really inflated. We're taking, you know, between 8 and 12% of rents collected.
I was going to say a few other things that caught my attention when Josh was telling a story. One is the importance of people. So this is an essential service. It's a business that will never be replaced by tech, AI. People have to manage properties. The other thing is, and this has just been coming up a lot with my book of business, everyone thinks that their market is not the right market. Either my market's too competitive because I'm in a big market. Lately, it's been my market's too small. I don't know if it's sustainable. Are there enough people here? Is there enough demand here? Josh is doing this in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. How many brands have we spoken to where their top franchisees are in some of the smallest markets in the country? And I don't know, Josh, if your market was a feature or a bug. It sounds like it was kind of a feature. Like, it's a good thing that you're in a smaller market. But just what you've built in South Dakota, which is a state that a lot of franchisors don't even register in. They have, like, no interest in even being there.
It's true. North Dakota, South Dakota is very true.
Yeah, so South Dakota's, I think, right about 900,000 people total. And in our Sioux Falls market, if you took the metro, I think it's probably around 250-ish, 250,000. And then we're in a ton of small markets as well. I mean, like, you know, we're not actually advertising and building the business in those markets, but those are just those markets of opportunity where we can manage 100, 200 units all in one place. And so those markets could be, I don't know, 6 to 12,000 people.
There is an accounting term called, like, economies of agglomeration. It's like when you want to buy a car, you go to a rope. There's got to be an area in your town where there's this car dealership. They're all next to each other, right? And you go to the mall, 50 jewelry stores. Not one jewelry store said, I want a used clause. Not one. They're like, nope, let all the jewelry stores come into the mall. I'm game with that. There has to be an economic term for if you operate a business in a small market, you will have 1/100th the competitive environment that Miami has, and you can take market share like that. And it's easy to take market share today. One, no one answers the phone. Two, people can't tell the truth. People have a very strange relationship with the truth today. Look what you've done. You walked into a market with no industry experience and you dominated it.
I don't have any experience in a large market, so I don't know. But I can tell you, in a small market, we know who our competition are. Yes, we have four. And so we know exactly what they charge. And it's, you know, you think about Google ads. Like, how do you get a Google ad done in Atlanta? I have no idea. Never been there. But in Sioux Falls, I could be on the top and it doesn't cost that much. So our marketing cost is down. It's just more about, you know, the old thing, the riches are in the niches.
I'm assuming your competitors are mom and pop independents. They certainly don't have the backing, the digital marketing experience, the technology, the tech stack that RPM would have. How big of a differentiator was having RPM behind you?
In our, every market is different, but in our market, when we entered, there probably was, say, 8 that I could identify. And in those 8, there probably was 2 that were large. And we still have one in the market that's double our size yet, right? And so I think that's pretty common. You'll have one dominant player in a market of, you know, 250,000 people. So now they're our competition. But we're out competing them. We just took, I don't know, 700 units in an awesome relationship from them 3 months ago.
Do you know why?
Yeah. So the primary reason was they were also a developer. And so they're just mostly managing their stuff. And so when they tried to do third-party management, so manage things that they don't own, they're not customer service. They're not thinking about their customer. They're like, this is the way we do it. You do what we do and you live with it. Where we come at it from the opposite perspective, and it's always about how do we produce value for the customer? What do they need? Yes, we have to have systems and processes because otherwise we'd go insane, but can we customize what we do and give the customer what they want? And that has been just amazing to give them what they want. I ran into one of them at church on Wednesday, and he said, we could tell such a difference when we moved from the competitor to Real Property Management. You guys were enthusiastic about what you did and you tried new things. And so it was a breath of fresh air to be entrepreneurial in that space. Certainly with the mom and pops, this is a relationship business and it does come down to trust. So certainly we had way better branding, marketing, website, all that stuff, right? We could hit the ground running. I'll tell you this story. When we started, somebody asked me, they said, why would you buy a franchise? Why not just start, go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble at the time, get a book, Idiot's Guide for Property Management. And I really said, well, so why would you pay royalties for this? And I said, it's about time. Like, I don't have time. I'm 30 years old. And I said, I have to make this thing as successful as it can be as quickly as possible. And I need the shortcut. And the franchise was the shortcut. And I think that has definitely turned out to be true. A big thing from RPM side is not only did they have the marketing, you know, all the systems were set up, they also had the fees and how to price things figured out. And so I think we were always able to make more money than our competitors, probably, just in how we set it up. So that was a bunch of big opportunities there.
Josh, you bring up two valid points. On every day, people talk about, why don't I just do this on my own? How difficult can this be? Do you know how many realtors are in your industry in the state of Florida? Every realtor I talk to, it's like a one-liner. It's a throwaway line. Oh, I manage properties. They all say that. None of them have any meaningful revenue, right? None of them. It's interesting. But one of the things that you bring up are two formulas in business that no one ever calculates. And it's the time value of money. No one ever discusses time value of money. What is it worth to collapse time, right? And ramp up super fast and scale that business. I could argue on this call that you would not be doing $14 million at this phase of the maturation of your business had you done it alone. And there's a powerful process leveraging that RPM name. People trust you. You're largest in the country. There's something to be said for that versus a mom and pop walking up to a builder. So, and then opportunity cost. No one ever calculates opportunity cost. So time value of money and opportunity cost are two formulas no one ever discusses. Do a franchise, manage risk, ramp up fast. A dollar earned today is more valuable than a dollar earned in, at some indefinite point in the future that McGarry and Euler figured out.
In the early days, I really hung around with the big guys, right? I mean, anybody that was larger than me is like asking them questions. I'd travel to their office. I'd pay to have them come to my office and just learn everything I could just to shorten, to compress that time, that learning curve.
What's the ratio of your staff to doors? So, and there's math there, right? So there's 4,300 doors. We have 100 plus employees. What do you see in terms of I'm adding more doors, therefore at X number of doors, I have to add more staff? What's the formula?
Yeah, I don't know exactly. I do have to chuckle because back when we, you know, were at Discovery Days, Kirk's thing was 100 doors per person. That has never been the case. It's always been way fewer doors per person. But ultimately, it doesn't matter because it's, can you make money? It doesn't matter what the number is. So I just looked, ours is about 34 doors per person. And that's everything. Now, of course, we've got support staff. I got myself, you know, leadership team. Now we have an HR team. We have four people in marketing. The actual operator, on-site manager is probably, they can do about 180 units, but then they have support staff that are doing, you know, billing and managing, coordinating maintenance and answering the phone. Yeah, there's a lot of different numbers there, depending on which one you want.
Josh, I would think at the level that you're at, when you talk about maintenance, you could have your own landscaping company, electrical company, plumbing guy. I mean, there could be businesses within your business just servicing these homes. Have you done that?
Yeah, so it's really tempting. And actually, so you got maintenance, lawn care, snow removal. You could sell insurance. You could do property sales, right? All these homes need to be sold at some point. You can broker those. You can do a cleaning company. There's just tons. You can do an HVAC company, electric company, tons of stuff. Really tempting. And we have decided to stay focused because all of those things are distractions. They all are a different skill set, a different, because, you know, and we're part of Neighborly, so we could go get an air server and a Mr. Rooter and a Mr. Electric, all those different things, but they're all different. And we don't want to take our eye off the ball. And so we have actually, instead of going wider, we have gotten narrower. And we've said things like, we're not going to do HOAs. We're only going to do A-class units built in the last 10 years. So we've actually gone way more narrow so that we can be the best in the world at that. So very finely tuned part of the market.
It's interesting, right? Being the largest brand within the Neighborly family, I would think RPM is probably the biggest customer for some of these other home services brands that Neighborly owns.
Yeah, it's been interesting. One of the challenges RPM has had working with the Neighborly brands is that those brands are much more B2C, where we're much more B2B because we have to serve the investors. The investor just doesn't care about the booties and the customer service, right? As hard as that is to say, they just want it done and they want it done as cheap as possible because it's an investment. And so that really doesn't fit with Neighborly, but there are other opportunities. So for example, I know it's a weird example, but we're working with the AirServe brand in our location. And I don't know why, but there is a factory direct service and they'll only sell to property managers and builders. I don't know why, but we were able to set up an account for AirServe and they're now buying off of our connection. And it's saving them, like, I think $700 per AC unit. And it's better than they can even get in the wholesalers in town here. So he's over the moon with us. We've got to be more creative in how we do it. I think that relationship is probably even though it's maybe 3-4 years old, I think there's more to come out of the neighborly connection. We just have to, it's not obvious. Just their knowledge in marketing, right? They've got a big marketing team, so they know how Google Ads are running, graphic design, websites, all those types of things.
They're a monster, huge. It definitely aligned with the right brand. Oh, by the way, you weren't even with Neighborly when you joined. So you went from RPM to Neighborly. That was a force multiplying effect right there. There's so many golden nuggets in this call. I do love your laser focus. And you're right. People are tempted to be distracted. We talked about going a mile deep and an inch wide versus going a mile wide and an inch deep, right? You just said, that's it. We're going deep. 4,300. We'll have, what's the goal? Yeah, I know you definitely have a goal.
Yeah, so 20,000 units in 2029.
You got started in this business during the housing market crash. There's definitely been down markets in real estate. I'm just trying to think, like, I don't know that there's ever been a bad time for property management. Like, you tell me if there's been a bad economy for what you do. And here we are now with this crazy inflation over the past few years. In some markets, housing prices are up 40 to 50%. Rates have spiked. This is the least affordable housing has ever been in the history of our country. You have an entire generation that's questioning whether or not they'll ever own a home. I mean, you're seeing complete communities being built to rent only, right? You will own nothing and you will be happy. You have to be so bullish on the future of property management.
Yeah. So if we go back to 2010, one of the reasons, as we look, because I was looking at different business opportunities as well, from teaching to restaurants and whatever, but there's two reasons for property management. One was this aspect of recession resistance. You know, we're dealing with, quite frankly, guys, it's an unsexy industry. Sorry, we're the janitors of the real estate industry. We deal with dead bodies. We deal with cockroaches and bed bugs and broken pipes and floods and fires, right? There's lots of crazy stuff that we deal with, but everybody needs a place to live. Straight up, right? When is that going to go away? And somebody needs to manage that. Somebody needs to do the repairs and collect the rent and pay the bills. COVID, we killed it during COVID. You know, people went home. We worked remotely. This business, a lot of it can be done remotely. And we grew like crazy during COVID, coming out of COVID. Obviously, the whole market's been a bull market since 2010. We've had a little bit of weakness here and there. But even if it does weaken, it's okay.
I also heard a stat that about 25% of all the homes that were purchased during the COVID boom were not primary properties. They were secondary homes that people were planning on using and now maybe not using as much. They can't sell them and they're just renting them. All these homes are being rented.
You gotta love PPP money. It was called the Paycheck Protection Plan or something, right? Which bought Lamborghinis, right? Bought second homes. What a country. Are you seeing what a lot of markets are seeing with private equity buying all these homes, or you're not dealing with the Black Rocks?
Not yet.
You're not seeing it. Interesting. You're actually seeing high net worth groups of investors.
People get together, they'll come in at $100,000 each or $500,000 each, and then they'll raise $12, $20 million and put up a project or buy a project.
Are you participating in these equity opportunities or are you still staying in your lane?
Absolutely. I mean, this was always the plan back when we started. Part of the reason for property management, I was going to mention this, not only was it the recession resistance aspect, but it was also that I wanted to learn about the market. So I took classes on investing, stocks, options, all the iron condor strategies and whatnot. Real estate was that other piece, right? It's stocks, it's real estate and it's commodities. And I thought, what better way to learn real estate than from the inside, right? So I can get inside legal insider information by managing the things. And what we've realized is that you can put together deals on paper. I can make anything look good on a pro forma. But at the end of the day, it's got to be bought right, and then it has to be managed right. Most of your income off of a rental property is going to pay expenses, right? Easily 40% is paying expenses. And then you got debt service, principal and interest. That last little bit of occupancy is where the profit's made. Right. So if you're running at 90% occupied versus 96% occupied, that's the profit. That's where the money's at. A good property management can make or break you. Then, you know, 5 years in, we learned how to analyze rental properties, learned how this is all cool stuff too, guys. You guys probably know this as well, but things I didn't realize when we started. So we learned how to analyze a rental property. We bought our first duplex full of bed bugs for $100,000. And once we made that corner, now we could talk to investors, our customers, not just as tenants and toilets, but now we could talk all the things I didn't know about, balance sheets, income statements, ROI, IRR, all those things. We could talk the talk and help them make good decisions, both on the purchase, on the sale, and on the operations. And then how that dovetails back to RPM is we pitch this back to the franchisor. And this is what's fun about RPM is there's a lot of back and forth. So they're giving us value, we're sending value back to them. And so we said, hey, there's something here that if we really help our investors understand what they have, we can help them buy more. And so what came out of that was Wealth Optimizer, which now is a tool. Wealth Optimizer is really an idea, but it comes with a tool. But it helps you put in your single family home, analyze it. Here's what your return on investment is going to be. Should I hold it? Should I sell it? Should I buy this one or should I buy this one? So Real Property Manager now has that, but that's only about 10% of Wealth Optimizer. Wealth Optimizer is an idea of how you think about building wealth through real estate. And so now our franchisees are getting training in that as well of what's depreciation? Can you accelerate depreciation? Can you do macros? That's another fun thing. I got to share this with you if you don't mind. Do you guys mind?
No, but that's the purpose. We've got the man on.
The law changed, I think, back in 1996, where you could not use passive losses from real estate to offset active income. Prior to that, you could. So for example, if I'm a doctor, I've got a rental property and I've got depreciation that's wiping out all my rental income. So I'm not paying any taxes on my rental income, even though I've got cash flow coming in from my rental properties. I'm not paying tax on that. But if I have excess depreciation, I can't use it to offset my doctor or my attorney income. However, if I'm a real estate professional, I can. So not tax advice, but go look it up. It's publication 925. If I'm a real estate broker, developer, redeveloper, or property manager, I can. So when I go and invest now in real estate, there's excess depreciation that comes off of that. I can use that excess depreciation to reduce my taxable income from my property management. I'll have to pay that eventually when I sell, but right now I get to use tax-free money to build more wealth. Great. And if I die without selling it, my heirs get to take that on at a reset basis. So we'll never pay the tax back. But yeah, just that was something that was just a freebie that came out of being a Real Property Management franchisee that you can now maximize. So not only do we understand real estate from the inside out, we got tax benefits to invest in it. We get to manage it ourselves. We get the pick of the litter so we know what we're buying. We just did a deal, right? We just put together a $34 million deal 4 months ago. We had managed it for 3 years prior to that. So we knew what the property was before we purchased it. Right? How much better due diligence can I have? You know, I know what the numbers are. I know the rent numbers are good. I know the expense numbers are good. I know where there's opportunity that the owner hasn't tapped into yet.
That's powerful. So the answer is yes. You're actively taking equity stakes in these deals and then managing them and learning a ton of tax efficiencies along the way. Tax exchanges, what are they, 1031s? Yeah, all that. So, I mean, there's so many benefits. I like real estate. Justin likes options and stocks and bonds. You know, he's into, but he likes real estate too, but I think I like real estate a little bit more. Talk to us a little about your book. Give us some golden nuggets for the listeners. You wrote a book, the reviews are phenomenal. Give us some things that's like, look, people don't know this, and I wrote the book to educate them.
The book is called Rental Property Success.
Yeah, and so what I was trying to do there again is content marketing, create value for your customers, right? As opposed to say, give me business, like how can I help you, right? And that's what Wealth Optimizer is, that's what the book is. Everything is focused on that. So we really wrote it from the perspective of really kind of a person that has one home, right? That was our market, that was our ideal customer back then. And then just really helping them think about, for example, a lot of single family homeowners are like, I don't want pets, you know, pets are horrible. I was like, you sure? Because listen, you can charge $45 a month per pet, right? So they got two pets, that's 90 bucks a month. You can charge pet deposits on top of that. You still have the full rent, month's rent deposit, and they're still on the hook if they damage the property. So you're going to make more money, you got more protection, and that property is going to sit vacant less because you have a bigger market segment to choose from, right? If you say no pets, that also comes with its own set of risks. And there's all these offsetting things. So oftentimes we could help people understand the risk reward. And they're like, oh yeah, you know, I'll take pets. And so that was just one example. We talk about the cost of vacancy. I know people do not realize the cost of vacancy. They get all upset because they had to replace a roof or a furnace. It's like, guys, you know, 2-3 months of vacancy is the cost of a furnace.
Just get someone in the home. I kind of don't care what they're paying. It's not worth waiting 4 more months to get someone who's going to pay $200 more. Just get someone in the house.
That's excellent.
I actually think it's interesting that you mentioned this Wealth Optimizer, the technology and the kind of the tools that RPM has rolled out. I've heard a lot about it, and I wasn't even sure if I wanted to ask you about it, because my assumption would be someone like you who's been in the system for so long before they even had this, like, are you like a lot of times an older franchisee, it's like, oh yeah, I'm not even using that because I have my own way of doing things and it's just not that important. But obviously there's value there if it's something that you're, you know, you've kind of brought into your business.
Yeah, so Wealth Optimizer has a special place in my heart because essentially it was my and several two or three other franchisees' idea. We brought it to the franchisor and said, we got to do this. The reality was the RPM hired somebody to go do it. She ended up quitting. Neighborly bought the company at that point. So it really struggled because it just was in that whole turmoil. Now, finally, the current president, Jeff Pepperny, has pushed it over the finish line and really made something excellent. But really, Wealth Optimizer is part and parcel of how we got to where we got to. Because it's all about understanding the investment from the inside out. And so Wealth Optimizer is just the tool that makes it easy to do that. Whether we're using the actual tool, which will absolutely help on single family, we're using the concepts every single day in multifamily.
What are your curbs where you're saying, these are the KPIs, if it can't achieve that amount? What's your discipline there?
That's interesting as well, because it cap rates, you know, once you understand what cap rates are, you understand that cap rates are very sensitive to interest rates. And you know that you've got to have a cap rate that can support the interest rate. So as interest rates go up, cap rates go up. If interest rates go down, cap rates go down. As cap rates go down, the value of the property increases. And so the value of property is very correlated to what interest rates are. I understand if I move this lever, this happens.
People were happy at a 5% cap rate when interest rates were zero. It doesn't work anymore. People get stuck on things in the past. Like, no, I was told, I read a book. Yeah, you read a book from like 2007.
When you're getting 5% on short-term treasuries, 5% in a property with bed bugs just isn't as attractive anymore.
Right.
Hey, how'd you get rid of them? Heat?
They freak people out, but you just spray for them and they're gone.
Cliff, I know you. You're the guy that flips over the mattress when you get into a hotel, right? Be honest.
Oh, I check everything.
No. I don't want to know.
No, you got to know. You got. I was at the Grand Ole Opry in Tennessee, and a woman in front of me, why she wore this blouse, her back was wide open. She was literally eaten alive. I go, what happened? She goes, what happened? I was eaten alive by bed bugs. This was Grand Ole Opry. I mean, it doesn't matter anymore. It could be four-star, four-diamond. It doesn't matter. That you can get this at any type of property. It's not reserved, you know, for properties where you back your car up to your door.
We've said a lot. I think what Josh has accomplished is just incredible. I think a lot of people are going to want to look at the property management industry now that they hear this. I love the brand. I mean, if you're going to do something in property management, which is competitive, start with the best in class, the blue chip, which is RPM. Some things that we didn't mention, the investment. So the item 7, $91,000 to $266,000. That has gone higher. I know this business does require an office. They want you to be working in a professional setting so you can meet with potential clients and investors. And you have to have a realtor's license, not coming into the system, but at some point you will have to have a realtor's license in the business. I think it's great. When you talk about recurring revenue, recession resilience, the opportunity to be in a hub and spoke model, eventually build a real estate portfolio, there's so much to like about it if you're into real estate. There's a lot to manage, right? I'm sure this has not been easy, right? There are a lot of moving pieces, but I mean, look at what this guy came into the system with nothing. And what you've built, Josh, is just incredible. So I think it's awesome.
I agree. And I watched some of your crazy videos, rock climbing. You're a nut job. Like that, you're an adrenaline junkie.
I'm a low excitability. EMT,
just the breathing on climbing. The videos, it gave me anxiety. It was the tugboat, and I forget the other one. It was Mount Rushmore.
You know what else is a common theme here with successful franchise owners that we've had on? A lot of them end up becoming pilots. Yeah. You guys love planes. It's like, listen, we have money. The world's our oyster. We can go wherever we want now, right? We have freedom. That's financial freedom. And you guys are buying planes and flying around the country. It's awesome.
Yeah, I actually became a pilot at 17. So it was just something I liked back in the day. And now we do use it for business, because especially when properties are 2-3 hours away, just got a little four seat and we can drop into a little local airport untowered, jump in a courtesy car, drive to the property, look at it, drive back. I think the most I visited was probably about 8 properties in a single day. So take off, land, drive back, take off, land, drive back, and just cruising. So
you had to say that for the tax write-off, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was
legit. It's all business.
Right.
No, cool. It was legit.
That's
Josh,
cool.
You're all right, man. This was great. I'm going to go with Justin. This is going to be widely listened to. This was valuable. You brought a lot of valuable nuggets to the table. Plus, your background is inspirational. You're very relatable, as I said. I've always liked the model, but it was really great to get to know you better. And man, I commend you. Congratulations on amassing great wealth and success.
I appreciate it. Well, you guys made the interview easy, so.
Thanks for taking time out of your day to meet with us. What was the number by 2029?
20,000.
Here's the 20,000 in 2029. Come back on when you hit it.